offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to yet another episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind, and we are joining you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. Even as we reach out to all of you, we hope that all of you are keeping safe and keeping well by Swami's grace. We are here to continue our satsang on the series that we started last fortnight, the series on Swami's Sanatana Sarathi, the journal that was started in the summer of 1958 on the Shivratri day it was launched, and thereafter it became a beautiful tool that covered the life of the avatar as Swami was traveling across the breadth of the country, the length and breadth of the country, the different places that Swami visited, the different lives that Swami touched. Of course, as we have said many times before, no account on Swami's life can ever be comprehensive. That's never going to happen. But it gives us an opportunity to at least go through some of the highlights in Swami's life, as Professor Kasturi was blessed to be a part of many of Swami's travels, most of Swami's appointments. I think in that sense, we have this opportunity to have a overview of the various things that Swami did in those early years. We completed the first issue. We completed the first issue. We took up the second issue. That was March 1958. We completed much of that. There are some small portions that we could not cover last time. We'll probably quickly go through that. We'll finish that and then come to the April of 1958. Fascinating accounts of Swami's travel, and more importantly, Swami's message that he's been giving from all those years. And even as we were going through some of these discourses, one thing that one could not help but think of is the consistency in Swami's message. Of course, we are nobody to pass certificates on Swami's consistency or otherwise, but the very fact that the message never changed, the message was always pure, the message was always undiluted, and the message was the same whether it was being delivered to children studying in a school or to aspirants who were participating in satsang and sadhana. The message was the same, eternal, pure, and it is our good fortune that we are able to go through all of these and constantly remind ourselves of what Swami wanted us to follow and how Swami wanted us to lead our life. With that short introduction, let's invite Arvind to join all of us before we dwell into these issues of the Sanatana Sarathi. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem, and Sai Ram to all our listeners. Just like the Sanatana Sarathi at the end would always give a complete date-wise information on where Swami was present, what happened when, I think it would be good to begin this episode in this manner. As we had already said in the previous episode, all the events that happen up to the 10th of a particular month gets covered in that month's issue of Sanatana Sarathi, because on the 16th of every month it is posted to everybody. And that is the reason why in the April 1958 issue of Sanatana Sarathi we find this date being mentioned again by Professor Kasturi, that if anyone wishes to change their address, please send us the information about the change of address, the old address and your subscription number before the 10th of the month, because after that it becomes difficult to change anything. So at the end of the March 1958 issue, there is a detailed description of all the things that happened in March. So it appears, you know, going by that, I just feel maybe it is the March issue comes in the beginning of April or something, because otherwise how do you write what happened on March 25th or March 29th, unless, of course, it is the proposed plan for the month. That is one thing, dear listeners, we will get back to you after confirming. But here is what happened in the month of March. From the 1st to the 4th of March, Swami was at Chittur. Then from the 4th till the 8th of March, Swami was at Bangalore. The Chittur episodes we covered last week. There is one discourse that we shall be covering this week. From the 8th of March till the 21st of March, Swami was in Prashanthi Nilayam, Puttaparthi. That is probably the reason why it has not been separately mentioned. Then March 22nd, Swami left for Madras. On 23rd of March, there were celebrations at Perambur. And so many things happened actually in the March Madras visit in March. But that we shall again cover later on as we come to that. So from the 22nd of March till the 29th of March, Swami was at Madras. On the 29th of March, Swami moved to Venkatagiri. Again, that is part of the April 1958 issue and possibly we will be covering it in the next episode. So Swami moved to Venkatagiri for the Ram Navami celebrations. And from April 1st onwards, there is a kind of assurance from the editor of Sanatan Sarathi, which says Swami will be at Puttaparthi throughout this summer. So Sanatan Sarathi was the official channel which would let people know of Swami's presence, physical presence, where it was and what was the plan. So I think we will begin with what was left out in last week's discussion when we discussed Swami's visit to Chittur, which is almost on the border between Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu. I think, Prem, we'll start with that discourse possibly which Swami delivered to the school children of the, I forget the school's name, 100
year old. There were two
schools.
I think. One was that BMS Kannan High School.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the other one was, of course, the BZ or Zilla Parishad, something.
Not
the
Baba, some Zamindar.
Baba Zamindar or something, high school. And
both of them are 100-year-old schools.
Right, both of them 100-year schools. And I think that was the reference I was making to when you're talking of Swami's message being the same. You know, these are discourses that Swami is delivering to school children.
Hmm.
And Swami, in one of those discourses, in the discourse that Swami gave at that Kannan High School, one was on 2nd March, the other was on 3rd March. Swami says in one statement, "First, be fixed in the consciousness that yourself is the immortal Atma, which is indestructible, which is holy, pure and divine."
Wow.
Right? This is to school children that Swami is giving. And of course, the discourse had a mix of both. The pure message that Swami gives based on the scriptures, based on Vedanta, that's Swami's message always. But also the advice that is necessary for children in that school. And one of those passages which Swami spoke about, which was very beautiful and profound, which is applicable to children in school and colleges even today. Because we see a lot of children getting into all of these things and wasting those precious years of their life. I'll just read out that passage and I think we'll talk about what Swami mentions there. Swami says, "Learn when you are students how to succeed in the turmoil of life. How to live without causing pain to others and suffering pain yourself." Very, very practical advice there. And then Swami says, "Do not waste time taking part in electioneering and quarreling over the factions and fancies of elders. They are setting you very bad examples, and you must avoid imitating their low behavior. Politics is a variety of ticks, which infest some individuals and worry their lives out. Do not catch that infection from them. Be clean and content. You are too young to understand the complications and confusions of politics, and you can only be the tools and instruments of people who want to use you for their own purposes. Be bold. Refuse to become scapegoats of such men. Tell them you have better work to do."
Two things strike me and stand out. One is the fact that Swami does not mince words even while speaking to children.
Right.
It's not as if I will dilute it or present it in a manner which is different from the truth. The second thing, of course, is about Swami telling us to keep away from politics. And I just feel that when Swami says keep away from politics, it's not only about just electioneering and, standing for leadership of a particular constituency, city, state, whatever. It also means to keep away from politics that infest at possibly the family level, at possibly the workplace level, because politics is omnipresent. It is there everywhere. So it's almost like keeping away from politics. So going to that first point, I just felt that when we see Swami communicating the absolute truth to even children, it just shows, it's evident that Swami is completely convinced of that. You know, if I can put it in that manner, let me elaborate with with our own lives, you know. When, for example, if my child or any child comes and asks me, who is this, and points to Swami's photograph, I will tell that this is God. Whereas, if some other guru's photograph is brought to me, I might possibly not say that it is God. I might say he's a good man or something like that. Which means basically what is my conviction is what I will state. There might be somebody who is hesitant to say Satya Sai Baba is God to a child. But I will not hesitate to say that because it purely depends on each one's conviction. What we are convinced of, whether it's an elder person asking or whether it's a child who is asking, we may slightly vary the style in which we are saying, but the truth we will not mince. We will say, you know, we may even preface it by saying, see, you may not accept what I'm saying, but this is what it is. So it all boils down to our own conviction. And that is possibly the reason why I will not tell a child that, hey, you are divine, you are the Atma. You know, because that conviction is not there. I might have the theoretical knowledge and an intellectual understanding. But since the deep-seated conviction is not there, I will not be able to tell it. In fact, possibly in an afternoon satsang, if we are discussing on Advaita, we might discuss it. But randomly, if people ask, who are you? I won't say, you know, I am actually the Atma. And so are you. I won't be able to tell that because that conviction is not there. And the very fact that whether it is to the scientists, whether it is to the politicians, whether it is to the children, whether it is to the prisoners in a jail, whenever Swami has written letters to or addressed, whether it is to the students in Vrindavan when he would write letters, it has been the same message. I think, you know, from a worldly point of view, that is very clear evidence that that is what is Swami's conviction, that he is an embodiment of that truth, and that's why he is able to state it so easily and clearly, irrespective of what the audience is.
Right, and the other point is, you know, when especially when Swami is mentioning some of these very profound truths to children, I think this is also something that Swami always maintained, that this has to be told to children without any hesitation from a young age. Swami would quote the example of mothers like Madalasa. Swami would say that, you know, in the lullaby that she sings to a child, she speaks about giving up body consciousness, and, you know, she says that, understand that you're not this body, you're not the hunger, you're the one who is, you know. So Swami would say that, and this is again a pattern that you will see even in the scriptures, which, you know, put forth some sadhana that one has to perform. They would say that this is the truth. And you accept it based on the words of the wise ones. And then you work towards it, right? Many things in life is like that. You know, we don't see it at that moment, but we accept it. Much of what we read in science, much of what we, you know, even understand in other learning, mathematics and everything, there is always a proof that comes later. You know, when you see about all our real analysis and all that, those are all proof for 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, right? So you take in faith value or with basic understanding something, but the deep explanation of that comes later. That comprehension comes later. So even in that sense, Swami would say that, see, some of these are truths that are not told to our children. Because it's difficult, or before, as you were saying, that you yourself lack the conviction, you can't tell it to your children. But these are things that have to be told. You have to be brought up with this idea. But that personal experience of that truth will come later with sadhana.
And I feel even if there is no personal experience, faith, if you believe that Swami is God, if you have that conviction, even if you are not able to experience the oneness of Advaita, the oneness of everybody, because I have faith in Swami's words, I believe. For example, I have no proof about the size of the cosmos or the galaxy, universe, no idea at all. Okay. And it's just my unwavering faith in the words of science that if my daughter asks me what is the size of the universe, I will say that it is these many times bigger than the earth. I mean, I have no doubts. I have not got the experience. But that is the conviction. And that translates into faith in Swami's words. So, to build that conviction, I'm building on what I said previously. If I lack the conviction, it is not necessary that I get the experience to get the conviction. If I just examine that I have faith in Swami and Swami has said this, that is also a good way to get conviction. And the second point is about that politics. Very interestingly, just today one of our very senior alumni brothers shared a very interesting experience that happened on the 18th of June 1993. So he writes that Swami was at that point in time talking to the Divisional Inspector General, Shri Ramachandraya, and the Superintendent of Police, or SP, SP of, right. What is the full form?
I think Superintendent.
Superintendent of Police, Shri Subbanna. So this DIG, he asked Swami, the Divisional Inspector General, he asked, Swami, in my opinion, selfless people and people who have great love in their hearts, they should enter politics. They should take up the power and they should rule the country, because only then the country will develop. No, politics is the power, is the mother of all powers. And that is why, if that is set right, everything else will be set right. So this is my thought. This is what he put forth to Swami. And Swami said, in my view, you know, this is so beautiful. Swami always prefaces what he says with, in my view, na udeshamlo. There is no need, in the sense like, that is the supreme view, that is the truth. And yet that is the humility. That is why Swami says, my life is my message. So humble. I don't preface everything I say that with, in my view, because I feel this is the truth, man. Come on. I know it. But Swami says, in my view, there is no difference like politics, spirituality, etc. Everything is the same. You need selfless people in all spheres to join together and work. And that is more important, joining together and working. Because one good man in politics cannot do anything. Just like one flower cannot make a garland. Just like several flowers have to come together to make a garland, selfless people across all spheres must come together to take this country and restore its glory. Much later, you know, having heard this conversation, Brother Sainath, who shared this experience, he said, Swami, I heard, I happened to hear what you spoke. Why is it, Swami, that you discourage, you don't approve of students entering politics?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what we saw also. Swami spoke to the students there.
Right.
And Swami said, see, politics is like a heap of mud. If you enter it without protection, you will have that muck falling all over you. To protect yourself, learn to be selfless. Learn to develop that inner strength and character. This is very important, inner strength and character and selflessness, if you want to enter politics for the purpose of serving others. Swami said the only reason you should enter politics is to serve others, because any other reason is not good. And if you are entering politics to serve others, you need selflessness, you need inner strength and character. Without doing this sadhana first, if you enter into politics, you will allow all that muck to fall on you, you will become part of the muck. Instead, you should be like the lotus in the mud, not allowing the mud to enter you. And then he said, Swami, how to do that? Swami said, I just told you that. Develop that inner strength through sadhana. Then it becomes easy. So it's almost like Swami is saying, first become spiritual, then you enter politics. Because a truly spiritual being, I mean, if we imagine Swami to be the ruler of our country, wow, awesome it'll be. But for whatever reasons best known to Swami, Swami kept away. But that is what it is. Swami says, unless you are absolutely selfless, don't enter politics. And because absolute selflessness is something very, 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 very difficult to achieve, generally and publicly, Swami says, keep away from politics.
Right. Now, given the lockdown that is going on here, we know that one of the things that we all are enjoying in India is the rebroadcast of some of those beautiful serials that were made many, many years ago. Mm. One of the things which is being going on now is, after the Ramayana, now it is Shri Krishna. It's a very beautiful conversation between, I think, Gadgamuni and Akrura, where Akrura, we know, is one of the chieftains in the Yadava clan and one of the well-wishers of Vasudeva. So he is very eager that when is Lord Krishna going to come and, you know, get even with Kamsa and going to Kamsa and take over the reins of the kingdom. Because from his point of view, he says that that is the best way the Lord incarnate who has come can, you know, set right things, right?
Mm.
Become a king and set order in the kingdom. So he's very restless. He's saying, when is it going to happen? And, you know, the thing is going on. So what is he up to? And the rishi tells him that, you know, he's spreading love among the gopikas and he's
doing his
leelas and all that. And he's saying that, what is this? I mean, short of saying that, isn't this all a waste of time? And avataric time, right? We all think of that, you know, when you read about what Swami did in Pathamandiram days or in the Chitravati, we wonder, like, the avatar has come. And even for that matter, even this discourse, Swami is giving high school children of some obscure school in some district in Andhra Pradesh, you kind of think that, you know, Swami probably should have been the UN General Assembly or something like that. So he asked this, isn't this, you know, why is he not coming and doing what he has come for? Then the Rishi says, this is exactly what he has come for. So then he says, see, this is the root that needs to be nourished. The moment you spread love and selflessness among people, automatically there will be order in society. So he says, this is the true work he has come to, and this is the true work he'll continue to do.
Hmm.
But for the people, for, you know, when they view the life of Krishna, you will see that he becomes a kingmaker, he starts making decisions, an important role he plays in the, you know, the royal geography of the Bharatavarsha at that time. But the true avataric mission is actually this.
No, absolutely, because I know I am just jumping discourse, but in today's proposed plan, we have another discourse on the 24th of March where Swami addressed the youth. We'll come to those details later, but there's one point that Swami makes there. Swami says, as long as man is capable of prema, dharma cannot be destroyed. So, when Krishna says that yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavatu bharata, abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srujamyaham, meaning whenever there's a decline of dharma, I will come. The best way to foster dharma is by fostering prema. And that is what Swami says. So, as you rightly said, leelas, mahimas, those little things which look like an avataric time waste, they build up love. And Swami says here that as long as love exists, dharma cannot decline. So, the best way to uphold dharma is by upholding prema. You know, another slight aside here, off late whenever I am speaking and I tell any shloka, I make it a point to quote the whole shloka. I won't say, Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya. I won't leave it like that. Because, you know, I just felt it's a nice opportunity to finish the whole thing, doing it in a proper manner. What are you going to lose in terms of time and energy if you as well say the whole thing? And this got inspired by a little incident that I heard from a brother who was saying that once when he was assisting Swami, he was there pushing Swami's chair and all that. In the interview room, Swami told him, hey, just get me a pen. So this boy went and got a pen. And before giving it to Swami, he wanted to ensure that it is writing. So on one small piece of paper which was on the side, he quickly scribbled a bit. It wrote and then he gave it to Swami. Swami said, hey, cha, dirty, what are you doing? So he got shocked at Swami's response. He said, Swami, I just checked whether it's working. Why do you have to scribble like that? Can't you write Om Shri Sai Ram? And you know, I just felt, wow, look at, you know, you will wonder, no, again, this looks like a waste of avataric time, right? Why are you getting into all these little things? But it is these little things. Like they say, perfection is not a little thing, but little things make up perfection. And that is what it is. So I just, inspired by that, I just felt.
I mean, these are literally like opportunities. You know, one of the teachers who were part of the Brindavan College, the STS Brindavan Arts and Science College, he was saying that he used to, I mean, those days they would go for darshan, and after darshan they would go for their classes.
Hmm.
So he was carrying one of his subject books, in which, you know, typically we write our name and we write the class and we write, I mean, if it's a notebook, we would write even the college name or school name or whatever it is. So he was standing there for darshan. Swami comes and Swami asks him, what book is that? And pulls it out from him and starts going through it. And there he has written SSS College. Okay, Shri Satya Sai College. Swami said, why can't you write even my name fully? Right? I mean, these, as you were saying, these are all important messages for us. There are a lot of people who write a mail to me, they say SR. I said, what is this? Is it Sai Ram? At least, why can't you at least write Swami's name? You know, you abbreviate everything else. ASAP, you make it. TC, you make it, take care. Whatever. Why do we have to abbreviate Swami's name? And these are all Swami's own instructions, because these are multiple opportunities that Swami gives there where we can do Namasmarana, take his name, do a Likhita Nama Japam, right? As you were saying, it lies in these small things. Perfection.
And that is the reason why, you know, last 2-3 times when I was speaking to somebody, when I happened to just quote, see, Krishna says Ananya Chintayantoma. And then I just swallow my saliva for a second and continue, Ye Jana Paryupasate, Tesham Nit. I feel, no, I'll tell the whole thing. Let me get the joy of thinking of the Bhagavad Gita Shloka or whatever. So, in that context. But yes, so coming back to this discourse, I think we will complete this discourse and then proceed ahead.
Now, two other points that Swami makes here, very beautiful, and this is the standard that Swami sets for himself. in one of those lines, Swami says, do not simply say, Sai Baba spoke well, or Sai Baba writes well. Respect Sai Baba only if he does as well as he speaks and writes.
Wow.
This is Swami speaking about himself. He's saying that if you feel that I am following whatever I am saying, then you give me respect and love.
It requires guts to say that.
Right. And then in fact, a continuation of this later in the discourse, Swami says, you boys must say to yourselves, these elders do such things, though they know them to be wrong. What a pity. But we shall grow up differently. We shall not belie our words in our actions. We will act together in harmony and love. If you develop such virtues, the nation will prosper. If not, it will be ruined. Have this warning always ringing in your ears. Again, the consistency of what Swami says, even as a small boy, the play that Swami wrote was Chepina to Chestara, right? And Swami is saying, if you feel that I am following what I am saying, then you give me respect.
What is left unsaid is when Swami says, when the elders are not following, you just decide that you won't do it yourself. It is like Swami saying, don't come to me with excuse saying, Swami, what are the me is doing what I speak, the elders are not doing, my seniors are not doing. Swami says, it's not about them at all, it's about you. That's what it is. In the ultimate analysis, it's between me and Swami. That is the thing, me and Swami. It's so beautiful, and the words are also. So, it doesn't matter whether others are following it or not. In my entire workplace, I am the only person following. In my entire home, I am the only person following. In my samiti, I am the only person following. I should not spend my time judging others, complaining about others. I focus on my spiritual growth and I focus on me following. Because you see, Swami also so clearly is saying that. Swami is saying, if you feel that I am following, then follow me. He is not saying anything else. He is putting himself on the pedestal there. He's putting himself as the example. He's putting himself on the chopping block. Saying, if you find any fault, then don't follow. If you feel that I'm following what I'm saying, then appreciate what I'm saying. That is again another message, that don't, appreciate somebody because of what they speak. If what they speak is in harmony with what they do, and that is there, then it's truly appreciable. Otherwise, it's nothing but hypocrisy. So it's amazing that
And the thing is, if Swami were to live his life any other way, I don't think we would have questioned Swami. Right? If Swami had chosen to live extravagantly, right? Though even now people think that Swami lived extravagantly, which is not at all the truth, nobody would question him. I was yesterday listening, thanks to all the beautiful online satsangs which are going on. Yesterday I happened to listen to one which Brother Gopi from Hyderabad was part of the Hyderabad youth and now part of the organization. He was narrating, and he's narrated this many times, of how his father came to Swami. And he, very beautiful episode. His father was the, district collector of the district of Chittur. We are speaking about discourses that Swami gave in Chittur. He was though born and brought up in Anantapur. He had no idea of Swami. He came to know of Swami when he was posted in Chittur. So when he was in Chittur, apparently there were some riots happening in Chittur, and being the magistrate in charge, he had ordered firing. And in that firing, apparently two or three people had passed away. So he was very disturbed about that. First of all, that, what he had ordered had resulted in this. And then he was also afraid of this spiraling into something more dangerous. So he couldn't sleep one night, and that night he has an experience, right? He doesn't mention that to anyone, and after that everything sorts out. So when being in Chittur, I think that time the Tirupati temple also comes in Chittur district.
Yes.
Even now does it fall in Chittur district? So when he was for many years in that district in various positions, he had written many books on the different rituals that are related to the Venkateshwara temple at Tirupati. What kind of ornaments he wears, and what kind of silk is offered to him, what kind of food is offered to him, everything. And he's one of the early books on Venkateshwara temple's rituals was written by him. So this was his background. And one day he was in Swami's presence. Swami had, he had come with another government official, and Swami had called him for an interview. It was a very formal interview because he had come as a government official, and all through the interview he was referring to Swami as sir, sir, and all that. And Swami was talking to them very casually, and he said, Swami, I have three questions. Can I ask? So Swami said, yes, you ask. So he said, Swami, you say that you are the avatar of Shirdi Baba. And he said, Shirdi Baba never wore any silk garments. He wore always tattered clothes. He wore a kafni. How is it that Swami is wearing silk robes and silk dhotis? Okay. And Swami kept quiet. And Swami said, what is your second question? And then he said, Swami, we see that you move around in cars and planes and all these expensive modes of transport. Shirdi Baba walked around and he was not one who used all of these things. So in this vein, some two or three questions all about the
comparing
Swami
with Shirdi
Baba and this misconception that Swami lives a very ostentatious life.
Luxurious life
and things like that. So three questions he asked, and then Swami asked him that you've written some books on Venkateshwara and all that, no? What kind of clothes does Venkateshwara wear? Yes. So then he started quoting all of those Agama Shastra verses which say that this is the kind of dress that should be offered. Then he asked, what kind of food do you offer? Then he quoted all of those. What kind of jewels do you put? Then he said, this is the jewel, it has to be in the crown, and this is what has to be. So all of that he described. And then Swami asked him, for a mere vigraham, which is made of stone, an idol which is made of stone, you are saying that these are the ritualistic offerings that have to be made. I have come down myself. Don't you think that this and much more should be offered to me?
Hmm.
Okay, this is the statement he made. And this was like, it was not something that he expected from Swami. Because all the while he was asking these questions, saying that, Swami, for a person who is a guru, these things are not right. Because that's what he said, a guru is supposed to lead a simple life. A guru is supposed to wear cotton kadi or, you know, that kind of a ochre robe, not silk. And you should not be, you are having gold buttons and all of those kind of things you are saying. So when Swami said this, he was a little taken aback. And then Swami asked him, that incident, he made a reference to that incident where he had ordered the shooting. Swami said, do you remember you ordered that shooting? Three people died. The whole night you couldn't sleep, wondering what would happen and will this become a bigger riots. Then Swami asked, what happened that night? So he was a little taken aback. Apparently he had a very, very ethereal experience where Lord Venkateshwara appeared there and gave him very specific instructions of how to diffuse that situation. Swami Venkateshwara had told him that you know, there's one person hiding in this place, this person has to be arrested, and then you will be able to get the whole situation under control. Swami repeated that whole thing, and then Swami asked, who do you think came that night and gave you those instructions? And he said, I am the same Venkateshwara who has come. Now you tell me, is it okay if I wear silk? Right?
So if Swami, as Shirdi Baba you're not supposed to wear, but as Venkateshwara you can.
I mean, when you have Venkateshwara, I mean, for that matter, any temple, you know, the best of man's abilities have always been offered to God. The best architecture you will find in churches, or in mosques, or in temples, right? The best painting was always, the best poetry was offered in the name of God, right? Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, everything is the best of man's intellects, intellectual prowess and abilities were always offered to divinity, right? So when you think of that, that's why I was saying, if Swami had lived a life which was much, much more flamboyant than all of this, I don't think any of us would have questioned. But still he chose to live a life like this, so that at least in that way, we will not to give us that scope of saying that, you know, Swami never followed what he said. You know, Swami followed every bit of that. Swami would live in such a small apartment. Swami followed all the disciplines that he gave us. Right? He woke up at 4:30 in the morning. He lived a simple life. He ate the most simple food that you can think of. Right?
And also, Prem, when you say that Shirdi Baba himself says, like when you, if you say Shirdi Baba, I'm just saying that if you see the movie or read the Satcharitra, Shirdi Baba would randomly ask, give me 10 rupees, give me 2 rupees. I'll tell you, Brother Amai, who is my neighbor, once I visited his home and his uncle, his maternal uncle had come. And his maternal uncle's father had met Shirdi Baba.
Oh.
So I asked him, what is the experience? So he said, I'll tell you an experience. And it was such a beautiful experience. He said that it was the day when his father had got his salary. And in those years, I think it was 1890s or 1900s, the salary was 2 rupees.
Wow.
Okay, so he was coming home with 2 rupees. And he met Shirdi Baba. So Shirdi Baba blessed him. And then he says, Shirdi Baba said, so will you not make any offering to me? Shirdi Baba demanded. He said, yes Baba, I'll make. So then Baba said, make it. So he pulled out 1 rupee. He thought, okay, I'll manage somehow with 1 rupee. And he offered 1 rupee to Shirdi Baba. Then Shirdi Baba said, I'm very happy, but I'll be happier if you give me 2 rupees. And not knowing what to do, this person gave 2 rupees. Shirdi Baba said, I'm very happy. And this man left. So, this uncle was saying that those days, because he was a teacher, and you know, it's so different the way teachers were worshipped. So, everybody gave him everything on credit. They said, oh, you want to take groceries? They said, take it, no problem, you can give later. No problem, you can give. So, the whole month he spent on credit. And next month he got to know that his salary has been revised. And the next month he got 6 rupees, which he credits totally to Shirdi Baba's grace. He says, no, Shirdi Baba took 2 rupees from me, but he has given me lifelong 6 rupees now, per month. So we don't understand. That is the reason why when we look at Swami also, we will see that those who have been blessed enough to be able to offer, they don't make a show of it at all. If at all there is somebody making a show of it, you know, they have sadly misunderstood the opportunity. If they think that they are doing a help to the Lord. The Lord bent and told the squirrel, thank you so much, you have done great seva for putting those few grains of sand. I was thinking if I was in Rama's position, possibly, I would say, what squirrel, you do what you want, man. You want to put grain, you put otherwise. I mean, because the amount of sand I can hold in my fist, you need 100 times to bring that much. The Lord doesn't need, but the Lord gives an opportunity. I remember when Swami had taken us to Hadshi, there the family of the Jadavs who were hosting him, the ladies and the gents together, along with the parents, they came and pleaded with Swami, Swami, give us the opportunity to do Pada Seva. Pada Puja, sorry, not Pada Seva. Mm-hmm. And we all know that Pada Puja was a tradition and practice that was done in the early years, where people would offer kumkum, chandan, haldi, and finally take Swami's print, footprint on the cloth. And so they wanted to do that, and because they pleaded so much, to make them happy, Swami agreed. And they said, Swami, we will be doing it with flowers. Swami said, okay. But you know what? When they actually started doing, they were doing it with golden flowers. At a physical level, Swami was also taken aback. He said, hey, what is this? Is it flowers? They said, yes, Swami, these are flowers we want to offer. Please, Swami, don't say no. So now when you look at it, I'm just saying normally, without any bias, normally if you look at it, even though Swami is saying no, the devotee is saying, I want to do it out of my joy. So when Swami accepts anything, it is not for himself. It is for giving that joy to the devotee, and that is what we see mostly also. Whichever devotee has been blessed enough to give. In fact, now that Swami is physically not there, they will speak about it little more openly. But when Swami was physically there, for them they almost considered it as taboo that, oh, somebody else got to know that I have given, and then if Swami gets to know that got to know, I may lose this opportunity. So they kept it a great secret. They would consider it a great blessing that Swami accepted this from me. That's it. Now I won't tell anybody. That is how it is. So, when the Lord accepts, whether it is silk robe or it's a kafni, or whether the Lord demands, as Shirdi Baba said, give me your entire month's salary. I want it as an offering. It is always to bless the devotee, to make the devotee happy.
And so that was the discourse that Swami gave in at BMS Kannan High School. We'll go to the other discourse also, probably we'll quickly go through some of the beautiful points that Swami makes there, because I think that is, even as we're going through the various visits that Swami did, I think that's what we'll do, but maybe we'll take a quick break, dear listeners. And when we come back, we'll continue with that. We are still in the second issue. Mostly we'll quickly cover that discourse. There are, I think, a couple of other articles,
articles that
we'll have to cover, and then we will go to the next one.
नटेश्वर
जय साईं शंकर नटेश्वर
सक कल कला प्रिय जय पटीश्वर सकल कला प्रिय जय पटीश्वर जय साई शंकर नटन नटेश्वर प्रणवाकार खुलकर सुंदर
Welcome back, dear listeners. As we took the break, we were discussing some beautiful points that Swami made in a discourse. And as we had said last week, the next day Swami visited another school, the other school, the BZ High School, and again another 100-year-old school. And there also Swami gave a discourse to the children. And we will just go through a few salient points of that discourse. Again, it's very beautiful, the advice that Swami gives. Here are some practical points also that Swami makes that are really striking and so much necessary even in today's world. So we'll go through that discourse before proceeding with two other articles that are there in that issue.
Right, we're talking about the instruction being practical. I came across this instruction which Swami used to give us even when we were, you know, when Swami used to speak to us as students. Swami says in one of those early parts in the discourse, Swami says, do not develop a dread for examinations. There, in a fixed time, you have to write answers to a certain number of questions. Well, some students start answering the very first question and go on serially with the rest. But it is always better to pause a little, read the entire question paper, select the questions that you can tackle with confidence, and write the answers for these in the beginning. This will give you a good fillip to exercise your brains better for answering the more difficult questions later. I can think of any number of times Swami has given this advice during Thrai sessions where Swami would say, don't answer like that. In fact, it's part of our, the way we answer. Always we do that. Read the question paper, select the ones which you know, and then write it. And it's a simple instruction. You know, the more you start with confidence, automatically you will find that you are able to recollect better the other answers and everything.
Actually, that is the thing, because if I say that I don't know this answer, the way I will answer it when I'm low on confidence versus the way I'll answer it when I'm high on confidence can make a difference of 2 marks out of 10, you know, right. Because that confidence itself will give you, that is the importance of confidence. In fact, this is an advice that is given even in games to, for example, when somebody is playing cricket, he's a batsman, he's not able to strike the ball. He's told that just let go of the ball, keep seeing the ball. Some of the legends of cricket whom I have heard speak, they say that when they are not able to strike the ball properly, it just happens to be a bad day. The way they deal with it is, keep looking at the ball. The ball goes from the bowler's hand, comes to you, you watch it travel to the wicketkeeper, then it gives, he's giving it to the fielder. Keep watching the ball throughout, and whichever you are able to play, just play those. Which you are not able to play, let them go. Let them go from the bowler straight to the keeper. Of course, those who have no clue of cricket will have no clue of what I'm talking. But for those who have a clue, when you keep doing this, after some time, you will suddenly find the confidence to play one kind of... you'll get the confidence to play the kind of shots which you were previously not playing. Simply because of the confidence that you have built, your eye has set in, that's what it is. And so this is a universal kind of... idea and strategy that is given by experts in their respective field. And as you rightly said, Swami would always say this even as late as when we were studying.
Right. And as just like in the previous discourse also, there are a lot of other very profound messages. You know, again, things that we've heard Swami mention many times later. There are two wires, the positive and the negative, which means the Paramatma and the Jivatma has to be brought together. Again, these are messages to school children.
Mm-hmm.
But then towards the end, again, some very practical and relevant even today. Swami says, do not be led away by all this present day talk of equality, either of men and women or of all men. Mm-hmm. Swami says, each has a certain fund of intelligence and a peculiar bundle of instincts and impulses, and that must be respected, and accordingly you should deal with and live with other people. Celebrate the difference. Swami says, do not by any action of yours cause pain to another, but that doesn't mean that all have to be treated equally. And in fact, Swami goes on to say, in your school, I find there are some girls too.
Hmm.
Treat them with great respect and do not speak slightingly of them. They are your sisters, and by honoring them, you bring honor to yourselves.
Wow.
And your sisters. Respect for women is a single sign of real culture. Imagine, this is 1958, those were times when I think the women were still beginning to come to education in large numbers. It was not a very common feature, I think, at least in rural India. So very, very profound and practical words that Swami is giving.
And as you rightly said, when Swami says everything is not equal, it is not equal. It's not created equal. There's no need for us to equalize everything. But like Swami said, we need to respect and celebrate the differences. How much ever we speak of gender equality, there are things that a man can do, a woman can never do. There are things that a woman can do, a man can never do. It was created separate. Otherwise, what was the need for separate? I mean, it's like saying all species are equal. Yes, as life, all are equal. But definitely, everything that an elephant can do, you cannot expect a horse to do or a lion to do. And everything that a lion does, you cannot expect. In the same way, there are differences that have been created, and we need to celebrate these differences and respect these differences. I think because that respect is gone, and it's a sad state of affairs that people are fighting for equality, that fight has come up because I think of extreme self-centeredness, extreme selfishness, and not respecting and giving due respect to anything else but oneself. That is the reason possibly we see this rise of campaigns for absolute equality.
Right. Coming to the other articles that we said we left out, one of the most important ones is the article by Professor Kasturi, where he writes about one of the earliest Chitravati sessions that he attended.
Mm.
Though the article is published in 1958, he speaks of a session that he attended in November of 1949. 1948 when, which part of the year he comes for the first time to Swami?
In the second half of 1948.
So it must be very, very early in his association with Swami.
With Bhagwan, huh?
Right, so he comes and I think 1949, November.
Yes, he comes and it is very clear that it's very early in his association because even as he comes, people are telling him, hey, you're very lucky you've come today. You don't know today, Chitravati session. And he has no clue what's a Chitravati session.
Right.
That itself shows that he is very, very new. And so they all leave to Chitravati. And Kasturi records that Chitravati was like a mere trickle, just one gentle and lot of sandbags on either sides. They go and gents and ladies are separated and gents sit on one side, ladies sit on one side, and he says that the children are playing along the borders. This is all an entirely new experience. And, you know, it's evidently Professor Kasturi would have attended so many more Chitravati sessions after that. But the first is the most memorable one, you know. What happens is most memorable when it happens for the first time because everything feels new. You know, for instance, you know, my father has had the opportunity to witness Swami sit on the golden chariot on all the three occasions when Swami went on the golden chariot, you know. But he still remembers so vividly. In fact, while preparing for this satsang, I asked him and he narrated the whole thing as to how it was his birthday, and for his birthday he wanted to come to Puttaparthi. He had come. It was the 22nd of September 1997. And he says, after darshan, oh my God, one huge golden chariot came. And Swami sat on the golden chariot, went all around the mandir, and he vividly described that whole thing. He was so thrilled, you know, and everybody said exactly what they were telling Kasturi that day. They were all telling him, hey, you're very lucky you came this day. You're so blessed. Hey, today is this day. So after that, for Sahasra Purnachandra Darshan and even Bhagwan's 85th birthday, Swami has been on the golden chariot. But he's, no, no, that day is that golden chariot. Oh my God. And actually, if we see the footage now, the golden chariots that were done for the second and third time were much more organized, had much larger crowds, because naturally they have been planned, but that spontaneous and I think Swami's chariot was taken around Purnachandra Auditorium,
right,
along the South Indian Canteen Road and back to Mandir. So that kind of that thrill and joy, actually more than the happenings in the article, Professor Kasturi expresses his thrill and joy. And it's definitely because it's his first experience, and the first experience is always very, very memorable.
Right. Then he goes on to say that they all go and find the clearing in the place. Swami waits for the other elders in the group to join them.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in their own pace. You can imagine how briskly Swami must have walked with all the other youngsters in the group. And then they sit down, and the first thing that Swami does is Swami begins to give a very beautiful discourse on karma and bhakti. And in fact, in that recording that discourse, Kasturi says that it was so simple that I don't know what he spoke, but it somewhere went deep inside the heart. You know, the mind may or may not have comprehended and made sense of whatever was said, but it was said in such a simple manner that it was like going straight in.
He says that even as Swami is speaking, my mind is not analyzing, but I don't seem to care because it's going straight into my heart. He records how Swami says that bhakti is the base and karma is the wall. Okay. Possibly in later, when you're sitting calmly and you're analyzing, you understand that you need to perform action to protect bhakti. You know, the walls protect the base. But only actions without bhakti is baseless. It's like a wall that is standing randomly somewhere, you know. A wall gets meaning only when it's protecting a house or whatever, you know, a base, a proper base. So bhakti and karma, that is the relationship between them. And all this, like how we are analyzing, possibly he would have analyzed later. But he says, even at that point in time, it's not about logic, whether what Swami is saying makes sense or not, because the heart is delightfully drinking into that whole thing. And in fact, he concludes in the end also by saying that I wish to keep all that joy and that enlightenment that the heart has received alive for as long as possible. So that is the magical thing about Swami's discourse. If we take today the text and try to classify it along one theme, of course, all the discourses in some theme or the other, they are classified in Satsai Speaks. But that is not a comprehensive. It's not as if Swami has stuck to that. Swami's discourse goes, meanders through so many areas. That's why, you know, again, I don't think we'll be reaching it today, but on the 24th of March, when Swami is addressing the youth there, in the Young Men's Indian Association College. There Swami is saying that Swamis is not a lecture. Swamis is just a distribution of prema. And that is what I think Professor Kasturi experienced on the sands of Chitravati those days.
Right. So that was about the discourse, and of course, no Chitravati session would go without leelas and mahimas. And so he records about that also. In the course of what Swami was speaking, Swami started speaking about Shirdi Baba and said that, you know, there are many pictures which are circulating saying that this is how he looked, or this is a genuine photograph of Shirdi Baba. And then Swami said all of that is fake, none of that is true. And then Swami materialized the picture and showed to them that this is exactly how he looked. And I don't know who has possession of that picture now.
If Swami gave it to somebody.
Whether Swami gave it to somebody or dematerialized it. And then Swami picks up a fistful of sand and converts that into vibhuti by pouring it into somebody's hand. And then Swami materializes a block of sugar candy from a flat stone, I think. Right? He picks up a stone from the sand, converts it into sugar candy, and then distributes that. And then Swami continues his discourse after that, where again I think he starts speaking about Shirdi Baba again after
Pranava, rebirth, Vairagya.
Right.
Different people ask questions and he's answering.
Based on that, right.
So it's literally like a session that we nowadays do, you know, where we first do a presentation and then take questions and answers. One thing I found funny here is like interesting, not actually so funny, the fact that Swami keeps searching for one perfect piece of flat stone so that, you know, it's easy to break. Or a person who is converting granite into sugar candy, can't you make a round stone into a flat sugar candy? No, but I think these are the sweet little things where Swami gives opportunity. I'm just imagining, though these are not recorded, when Swami is saying everybody must be eagerly searching, right? Like, I want to be the one who presents the stone to Swami, and Swami searching, Swami, how about this, how about this? And then Swami picks up a perfectly flat stone. Not in this case here, but I have read of another instance where Swami says that, no, I want it flat so that it becomes easy to break. If you, I mean, you make a round ball of sugar candy, it's tough to break. I mean, I was just thinking, oh, so sweet the Lord is. He uses Maya to just give opportunities, possibly to individuals to make offerings. In that one condition that Swami puts, that I want a flat stone, I'm just imagining at least a dozen devotees would have got the chance to come up to Swami and, Swami, how about this? Swami says, no, this is like this. Then go back. So the chance of interaction, talking to Swami, all the Swami does to give chances only.
Right. So that was the article by Professor Kasturi in the second issue. The other article that we did not complete last time was, as we were saying, there are patient stories which started appearing from the second article.
Second issue.
Where Dr. V. Brahmam, I think we should read up about him, because even the next issue has an article by him, must have been one of the earliest doctors of the General Hospital.
Or must be like the director of the hospital.
Right, superintendent or director, something like that. So he contributes articles where, from his point of view, I'm sure, because in the next issue what comes, it seems like a simple article of a doctor treating a patient, right? Because even Swami is not in the picture. So I think these are articles where he, as a medical practitioner, he knows that the case was way beyond the abilities of the medical professionals who were present there. And clearly he knows that even though it appears like there is no divine interventions physically or any manifestation there, he knows that it was not because of his knowledge that the case was handled. But the first article that he writes in the March issue is of a case where Swami did directly intervene and protect a patient.
Yes, in fact, it is dated 30th May 1957. So it's an episode that happened about 10 months before.
Right.
And he is speaking of a certain Papi Reddy from K. N. Palli, which I assume is Karnataka Nagepalli, maybe, which is the neighboring village to Swami. That is the village where Ishwaramma's parents settled and Mother Ishwaramma is from. So Karnataka Nagepalli, and he had been admitted for 2 months of treatment for dysentery and fever. So,
In Chikbalapur,
right, which is in Karnataka, which in those days must have taken about 4-5 hours to travel.
Right, and must have been a big town compared to...
Absolutely. Right. Even to this day, Chikbalapur is much bigger than Puttaparthi.
Right.
So in those days when Puttaparthi had not even started to see the D of development, Chikballapur must have been the big place. I mean, if Chikballapur it's not possible, the next option is to go to Bangalore, which is further ahead. But I think they brought Papi Reddy to the General Hospital in Puttaparthi. He had a constant fever that ranged between 103 to 105 degrees Fahrenheit. So they ruled out malaria, but yet they treated him with quinine, penicillin, chloromycetin. And that is the thing, the doctor records all these. They were given progressively along with regular sponging of the body to reduce the fever. Almost 2 weeks passed and nothing happened. On 30th May, he has been admitted. 2 weeks later, I think possibly it's the 13th or 14th of June and there's no effect. That is when Swami comes to the hospital. At this time, because of the fever and weakness, the Papi Reddy is unconscious. Swami materializes Vibhuti, puts it in his mouth, smears it on his forehead. Swami tells, don't worry, you continue with the treatment, he'll be fine. And just as Swami said, that night, for the first time ever, his temperature comes down to 100 and below. Otherwise, it was always at 103 and 105. And the doctor records that a few days later, on the 19th of June, the patient, hale and hearty, is discharged from the hospital. So, amazing. Just imagine Swami comes and does.
It's so fascinating that when they have a problem, they didn't come directly to Swami. They went to the hospital set up by Swami. And the doctor turns to Swami of his faith, right? They probably did not have the faith directly to come to Swami. But after this episode, would he have thought that anytime I have a problem, I should come to the hospital in Puttaparthi or should I come to Swami in Puttaparthi? I think that is something that we all have to think of, right? When the source of all that health and knowledge and everything is there, do we come to him or do we still let ourselves be led to somebody else, right? Even though set up by Swami himself, I mean, this is a hospital set up by Swami, but I think it is good for ourselves to contemplate on this rather than...
It reminds me of a conversation we had from the book Conversation with Bhagwan Sri Satsai Baba,
right,
where Hislop is telling the same thing as to Swami, should we take only Vibhuti or... should we take medicines also? Reading this, it feels like, why do you even need Vibhuti? I mean, anything, even Vibhuti is, because I think our mind, we are so dominated by the mind. I feel that if I go to a doctor, something will happen. You know, the other day, a maid servant, you know, she says that when I have this problem, I go to such and such a doctor. I said, why don't you go to our general hospital? She said, no, the general hospital, they don't give me anything at all. I asked, what does this doctor give? Well, this doctor gives injection.
Injection, right.
So, I asked, why? I was wondering, why do you think that injection is powerful and what did they give? No, some 3 pills they gave, that's all. That is how it is, you know. The mind feels that, the villager's mind feels that, when you poke my body, I'm going through so much pain. So, something big you're giving me. This is just a small tablet. And many times, they're so callous about it that they don't even take the tablets in the correct prescribed times. So that is how I think it is with the divine doctor and us. We are literally that kind of ignorant villagers when it comes to the divine dispensation, and that's why possibly Swami set up the hospital, because innumerable are the cases when in both the hospitals the doctors are unable to deal with it, not just in cases of like this Papi Reddy with a fever. Even when there have been blockages in arteries and cardiac complaint which are not being able to be resolved, they have reached out to Swami and Swami has given suggestions. In fact, I remember one episode, I don't know who narrated it originally, but I remember hearing it from you, wherein there was a problem where if you give a blood diluter, there is bleeding happening, and if you give a blood coagulator, there is a block in the heart, and Swami says, I have given Vibhuti, you treat anyone, other will not affect. You know, that is the Lord. And if we have absolute faith, that's what Swami tells Hislop also, that in normal circumstance, I recommend that you go through the medical professionals, what they're saying, but pray intensely to Swami. That is what Swami tells Hislop there. But if you really have the faith, Swami says actually nothing is needed. In fact, Swami doesn't say it, but it's almost like Vibhuti is also not needed.
Right.
But otherwise, general...
Swami says that whether you take Vibhuti or not is not material. What is important is you must pray.
Yes, you must pray. So that's what it is. That's why Swami says in general cases, go by what the doctor says, but pray. Swami emphasizes that. So whether you have complete faith and you're not taking medicines, or whether you feel that, no, let me take medicine, Swami says, either what you do, don't forget to pray. With that, dear listeners, we come to the end of the March 1958 issue. And in the March 1958 issue, we have a record of Swami's travel to Madras, which is covered in detail in the April 1958 issue. So I think we will begin Bhagwan's trip to Madras and see how much we can go ahead as time permits us. So on the 23rd of March, Swami was in Madras already, because on 22nd of March, Swami left for Madras. And on 23rd, Swami was in Madras to inaugurate the Satya Sai Mandir, not inaugurate the Mandir, to lay the foundation stone for the Satya Sai Mandir at Perambur. Perambur, I think that is where the Indian Integral Coach Manufacturing Factory is there. Mm-hmm. The railway coaches are manufactured from there. And therefore, this everything is about the railways there. You know, the hall is named after railways. The buildings are railways. The Indian Railways has a huge area that is taken completely by itself. And almost everybody living there works for the railways. Mm-hmm. So, it's almost like a railway colony there. And there, they had held weekly bhajans, weekly akhand bhajans, for 108 weeks in a row.
There was one devotee by name M. Durai Rajan, it seems. So he came to Swami in 1956.
Okay.
So he was one of the earliest devotees to come from Perambur. And he had prayed to Swami that he wants to go back and start weekly bhajans. And Swami had told him that you go back, and in fact, that time they used to refer to it as bhajan yajna, they're doing it on a regular basis every week.
Okay.
So he said, Swami, give me the permission to start bhajan yajna. And Swami gave him the permission to start it, and he started it on 19th April 1956, which also happened to be Ramanavami. And Swami had told them that you do it for 108 times, the 108th session I will participate.
That will take almost, I think, two years.
2 years and odd. But of course, Swami had also permitted them to have the 95th of that series in Puttaparthi itself, when they had come as part of a visit or something like that. But then, as promised, the 108th, was this occasion where Swami had visited that mandir in Perambur. In fact, one of the earliest mandirs of Swami outside of Puttaparthi. And Swami used to fondly recollect it. I still remember this for a specific reason, because when Swami had, I think, they had come and given a card to Swami. They were celebrating some one of the important anniversaries, and Swami was talking about it in the car when Swami had gone out for a drive after darshan. Swami had apparently been talking about that Perambur Mandir and how Swami had gone in the 50s. And after that, many, many trips, Swami would always make it a point to
visit
visit the Mandir. Some very old devotees are there. So while Swami was coming in the car, we were all standing on the way. And Swami was coming, and Swami was talking about the Mandir, and the first student standing there, Swami lowered the window and Swami asked him, do you know Perambur? Have you gone to?
Randomly.
Randomly. And the best part is that fellow was from Bihar or Jharkhand or something. And I am the boy from Chennai who was standing next to him.
Okay.
So I was thinking, Swami, you can ask me. I know the place Perambur. That's, you know, Swami's beautiful way of... I mean, the very beautiful thing is, you know, we've mentioned this many times in Thrai Vrindavan or in Portico, how beautiful it is that Swami is recollecting some of these devotees and some of these mandirs. You know, how fortunate they all are that they've found a place in Swami's memory, that when you speak of these places, Perambur or Gindi or, Machilipatnam or something, Swami will always associate it with a person, with a devotee, that this devotee had come and this devotee had started this, and, you know, how fortunate all these old devotees are.
And it's also such a lesson in gratitude, you know. Swami is still remembering the tiny Samiti. Today also, if you go, possibly the Perambur, that mandir is as big or as small as it was in 1958.
Right.
And yet, it was one of the first, it was born out of a pure intent. And that's why Swami is remembering it. And it's such a lesson in gratitude for all of us. Because it often happens that at a point in time, we receive help from someone, which would have meant a lot at that point in time. In the future, by God's grace, by possibly our hard work, everything, we get into a position where the help that we received at that point in time means nothing much. A few hundred rupees, it means nothing much to me. But it's a lesson that at that point in time, our gratitude is not about the quantity that is given, but the quality, how important it felt at that point in time, and that we should always remember, we should always be grateful. And that is what struck me when you were saying about how Swami remembers Perambur. there, after that, in the morning, once the stone, foundation stone laying was completed for building the Satya Sai Mandir there, it was followed by Narayan Seva, and Swami participated in that. Swami served all the Narayanas who had gathered there. And in the evening, Swami granted darshan at the new railway hall, where the devotees put up a program on the importance of Veda Parayanam and Bhajan. Very interestingly, this is 1958. I just, out of curiosity, went and searched on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Even to this day, it is called New Railway Hall. I don't know what's new about that hall. There are images put up online. You can see the Perambur New Railway Hall. Oh my God. I just feel that the fans that were there in place those years are still there. It has, of course, now become like a public function, social gathering and a marriage hall.
Mm-hmm.
Very tiny. And all the people, when you read the reviews, they speak highly of it because they say it's got a very big heritage.
Historic.
Yeah, and I think personally it will feel very special. Maybe they don't know.
Right.
But when we go there, it is special because Swami has addressed the gathering.
Exactly. So that was on the 23rd of March, and morning and the evening. The 24th of March, Swami had addressed the youth of the discourse that Arvind had alluded to, the youth, the Young Men's Indian Association, YMIA, which was started by Annie Besant. And Swami gave a discourse to that group.
Exactly. You know, in fact, the Young Men's Indian Association, it was initiated by Annie Besant. I think she has also initiated the Young Women's Indian Association as well.
Right.
Because she believed, in the same way, men, women separate. And it was meant to empower young Indians with the ideas of liberty, freedom, independence, because this was a time when India was enslaved by the British. And she came, settled in India and became one of the freedom fighters. In fact, Annie Besant was later elevated to the position of presidency of the Indian National Congress as well, which was fighting for the freedom. So that is her contribution to the Indian freedom struggle. And it started as a area where youth could come and build their body, their minds and their spirits. That is a lofty ideal with which it started. Sadly, today it has got reduced more or less to gymnasiums and sporting events happening there. The entire focus has shifted mostly to the physical and cultural activities. But it has great roots, and Swami addressing the youth over there, that's when Swami began his discourse by saying, I have come here not to lecture, but to share my prema. And why? That also Swami explains. He says, because as long as man is capable of prema, dharma is safe. Dharma cannot be destroyed. It just reminds one of... And Swami says, what is Sanatana Dharma? Sanatana Dharma is nothing but the practice of Satya, Dharma, Shanti and prema. In any religion, in any language, it doesn't matter what you call it or what... As long as Satya, Dharma, Shanti, prema are practiced, that is Sanatana Dharma. So it is not about Hinduism or Islam or Christianity. Wherever truth is practiced, that way of life is called the Sanatana Dharma, translates into eternal way of life. And that's what Swami says. And Swami says, therefore, I have come here to share prema. Swami says, prema can be of many types, but the most beautiful prema is bhakti, which is prema towards God. And then Swami speaks there about the three kinds of bhaktas, you know, which is the artha, arthaarthi and jignyasu, which is one who is seeking wealth, one who is seeking relief from afflictions,
right,
and one who is seeking knowledge, the jignyasu. And the way Swami speaks in that discourse is not as if these are three different kinds of devotees. It is like these are three stages in a devotee's life. Possibly when you reach the jnani stage, it is not as if you won't have financial difficulties, but they don't bother you. You don't pray to God for that. It's not like you won't have health issues, possibly like how Ramana suffered from cancer. It's not like that. It's not that you won't have it, but it won't bother you. You won't pray to God to heal you of that. So Swami speaks about the different kinds of devotees, and he says that for devotion, no qualification is needed. He says that what was the wealth that Kuchela had, Sudama? What was the education that Shabari had when she sought Rama? What was the lineage that Valmiki came from? He was Ratnakara. He was a crook. He was a thief. He was a highway robber. Lineage doesn't matter. Age doesn't matter. Prahalada was a young boy. Same way, attainments don't matter. Vidura was born to a maid servant. So all of this doesn't matter. Swami says, what matters is love. And Swami says, that is how love, no, should be like, Swami gives the example, you will see people on the road, putting rhythm with one talam, with some chips,
right.
Stone chips, and stringing a one string instrument,
right.
Twanging it and singing aloud.
Ektara.
Ektara, huh. Right. Swami says, the daily task that you do should be the rhythm of your life, and love should be that single string instrument to which all is tuned. Swami says, when you do this, you automatically attain God, you attain the highest in life, and this alone is what you have to do. And going ahead, Swami says, there are, based on this, there are two principles that you should live by.
Right.
I think that is, Swami emphasized all his life again. That is, do not commit faults that you accuse others of doing. And second thing, do not ask others to reach a standard that you yourself have not reached. So don't find those faults in others which are existent in you. Don't tell them to do something which you yourself are not doing.
Right. So I think we'll probably conclude with that. There are a few more points that Swami makes. And maybe we'll take it forward when we do the next, when we come to the next fortnight, we will again come back to Sanatan Sarathi Atman Satsang. Initially, we thought, I think we'll be able to complete one issue at least in one episode, but that doesn't seem to be the case, because dear listeners, even as we are going through this, we are also trying to look at other sources where the similar visits are mentioned or the discourses are mentioned, because I think it also gives a sense of occasion when you feel that Swami was there, as we were saying, in a gathering like the Young Men's Association. So what was it that Swami was conveying to them? Or when Swami is speaking to students, what is it that Swami is conveying there? Mm. Also gives us an idea of what is Swami's practical message to some of these groups, how we can adopt that also.
And the more details I think we go into, it helps us to actually relive and recreate that.
Absolutely.
So on that note, dear listeners, with the promise that we will continue with the third issue of the Sanatan Sarathi in a fortnight from now, because the next fortnight we will, as always, dedicate to conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sat Sai Baba between Hislop and Swami. With that, dear listeners, we take a leave. See you again next week, same time, same place. So till then, be safe, be inside in every sense, not just in the homes. Let's start going inside, because that's where the maximum safety lies. Offering this at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan, we'll end with a bhajan, on the other side of which Brother Chandu will greet you in his segment, Love to Love.
Ram Sumira Man, Ram Sumira Man,
Ram Sumira.
Janaki Vallabha Dasharatha.